The only thing that, like, if you're an actor, the one thing that you have to focus on is blocking and movement. Get your blocking and movement and know when you're supposed to move on what word and how you do it. And then for your takes, you can change intention. Do the same movement so that they can edit it. But on this one, you come from a place of love, like I love this. Or the next one, you come from a place of like greed, like I have to take this. And then the other one, you take from a place of like thinking, like, oh, I'm manipulating this. But you can do those different types of intentions as an actor, but keep the movement the same
The
so that when
same.
they edit it, you get it. And then
Yes.
when they're editing it as an actor, I'm a supporting actor. I'm not really ever the lead. So like then I'm making the other actor or the lead who I'm communicating with look in different ways.
We are the
Get Realisms Podcast.
I am Madam Chase Reddy.
And I am Christine Chin. And surprise, we're both filmmakers.
We get into it by sharing secrets, advice, and gossip in filmmaking.
And we even get our other filmmaking friends to share theirs too.
So please, everybody, join us for
an ode to filmmaking.
In this season, we get into Christine's feature-length thriller fantasy, Urzler.
A small idea that made a killer swamp mermaid a reality.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Get Realisms podcast, episode 83.
Oh, what?
We did what? 83 weeks of this, ladies and gentlemen. I am still Adam Chase Rennie.
I am very much still Christine Chin.
And I am right now Jason Kirkpatrick still.
Yes, that's a good response.
That's like, right. We got a guest in the house, ladies and gentlemen. Another one. We're back at it with another actor from our amazing cast of Urzley.
Yes.
Give it up for Jason, everybody. Thank you so much, Jason.
Pew, pew, pew.
We appreciate you being here.
Oh, I appreciate y'all. This is exciting for me.
Yeah? Yay. Okay, good. Yeah. It is just us shooting the shit, literally hanging out. And this is an excuse for Christine and I to catch up. And
it's
stuff.
Our public therapy session.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we should talk to each other more considering we are friends, but we just don't have time.
May I have a full disclosure here, though?
Sure. Yeah.
This is not my first time on your podcast.
No. Yeah. You made a guest appearance on yes, another episode.
And I met Christine and we did Half-Life.
Yes, we right. did.
In my kitchen at that place.
And that was the first time we saw Carly. No. Yeah.
Carly
no,
was there, yeah.
Second time we saw Carly. And the first time we saw Nikki, too, on the podcast.
Yeah, that was funny. Yes. Yeah, you like slipped in. Slipped out.
Well, and it was like, it was the end of all of it. And we were just all a mess.
We were all delirious.
Going to the pool in the back and then just like
delirious, absolutely delirious. Yeah. So I guess Jason, tell us, for the people who are listening who don't know anything about Urzley, what character do you play in Urzley?
I play the beautiful man. His name is Rhett.
He is beautiful. Yes.
He's a very beautiful man. Rhett, I play Rhett. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Rhett. How would you describe Rhett, or like, what did you model Rhett? Who did you model Rhett off of? If he did model him.
Well, I modeled Rhett off. Sadly, I hate to say this, but I modeled him off of these privileged white man who doesn't understand his privilege.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And also has like emotional triggers that have never been validated.
Yeah.
He was dealing with abandonment issues by his mom. And then he lived in a very small like southern community and had to deal with racism because his dad married a person of color. And he was teased because of it. And he had abandonment issues. It was never validated for all those things, but still felt like he deserved. And the frustration of all of that coming to a head, I think, is what happens to him in this story. And I think it's a sad story that's told a lot, but psychologically, Jamila and I talked about that a lot whenever I got to sit in the hair and makeup room and costumes.
Yes.
That's how I came to the story, you know.
How do you usually go about prepping for a role like that? Because I am assuming, and I ask this because when you came to the audition, you were so your character to the point that you shocked the then producers. They thought that you were unhinged and that we couldn't possibly rely on you.
Usually when I come to an audition, like there's a moment of greeting and saying hello, and then you go into the audition, but we didn't have that. It was COVID, it was all Zoom. Yep. Technology is not my friend. And I will live in the character. I just live in the character. I'll base off of things, and I like to live how they would live. I want to walk like they walk. I want to dress like them. And then when we did that audition, I just had that little piece. The only part of the script that I got to see was that scene when he confronts Wendy at the door. And he wants to know where his all-terrain vehicle has been.
Yeah.
And the only information you gave me was that he was high on drugs, and he was drinking, and that's what I had to go with. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is a really fucked up guy. And I think that after we started working on the film, it grew. I keep that audition, by the way. My
video. Oh, really?
I do. Okay. Sometimes I coach and I teach people, but I like for people to see this, but I'll let them read the scene first, and then I'll let them see my audition and say like, well, how did you get that? I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just what I saw.
Yeah. That's great.
I live the character. I want to feel the costumes. I want to know his shoes. I want to know what he looks like. But at the same time, it was, I don't know. I can't answer that actually.
That's great. I like that you pointed out that you use this audition as like a teaching tool, because yeah, what you re-engage from the script, you elevated it in a completely different way, you know, which is beautiful. When I say that, so Jason had to do two callbacks because I already knew that Jason was right. When I was co-writing with Camille actually hadn't met Jason at all, but I had worked with Jason on a feature.
Three films. But you only saw me act in the one.
I saw you act in one, Half-Lives, directed by David Bush, at actually the Josh Snyder Studios, actually. And I was blown away. And so when I co-wrote with Camille, I kind of described how I wanted Wright to be, because I had you completely in mind when we were writing. And so I already knew that you were casted, but I had to convince the people who were giving you money that you were the right person. And they are not as versed with the film business aspect and were just like freaked out by Jason because he was so appealing.
Right. They don't understand good casting. That's the problem.
Understand good acting.
There you go.
I will take that.
You one up me, miss.
So it was, I think they just thought that you were a druggie and that you were
probably
a coke or something, and that you were like bipolar. Like they just thought you were crazy. So.
Well, I think that's the role. That was the role I was playing.
And I kept trying to explain, like, that's because he's a good actor. That's not who he normally is. And they're like, no, like, we want to look at some other people. I'm like, there's no other people I want to look at. Yeah. So
remember, you and I had a conversation about it. And there's a conversation, full disclosure, there was a conversation about union and not union, right? Mm-hmm. And I was at a gas station and I was like, I'm tired of fighting for this role. I want it. We got to have it. Like, we got to have it. Like, you and I had like an argument in the car and I was in my car and I pulled over. It was a long one. And you were just like, stick with me. Just stick with me. Just stick with me. Like,
it's not me.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is a fight. Like, that's a different aspect of this whole business, I think.
Yeah.
And you can only trust what you know. And granted, we had this experience right the summer before in what mm-hmm. we did. That experience was not like anybody could ever experience anything, even making this movie. But we did three. You were AD for three feature length movies that we did in the course of what, 8 weeks or like,
yeah, because they were each like 2 weeks, except one of them was like 3 weeks. So what's that? That's like four, eight weeks, right?
Yep. And then our noses were swabbed every 3 days, and we had to have our fingers pricked for blood before we could come on the set. We were quarantined. We were stuck there.
It was like the height of quarantine too. Like,
and then people were stuck in trailers because they tested positive and they couldn't be around anyone, and then nobody could leave. Like,
or it was a strange time. There were two hurricanes that came through plus one tornado.
Yeah. Snakes.
Yeah, that was hard. That was so hard. That was an experience.
Swimming pools.
Yeah.
Swimming pools.
We did a podcast when you were in the middle of one of those hurricanes, or in the midst of those hurricanes.
Yeah, and I was like, if I'm not alive.
Right. Well, no, you mentioned you're like, the power can cut out and this meeting can be over at any second. So, you know, just forewarning. You know,
I know. And I don't like, I think I took the laptop and like walked. I think we paused in the middle of it to go to some place that actually like the Wi-Fi was stable.
Probably.
Yeah. I think I was in the barn, Jason.
Yes, I do. I think at one point I had to run in and tell everybody to get out because hail was coming.
Yeah.
And then like had to unplug all of the like anything that would be Wi-Fi, like,
yeah. And then I had to go over to the river house. It was like all sorts of crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, but
isn't it wild we did that? Like, it is wild to think that that was existence.
Yeah, but now you were so wonderful, and everybody who's seen the test screeners has been like, oh my gosh, the villain is awesome. And
the villain,
like, the villain, I know. And I think what every good, I always call it action drama, whatever, needs a good, it's the villain that makes it really. And so it's a fun film. Although I sometimes cringe when I show it at like small, tiny Texas towns, southern towns. Cause I'm like, ooh, do they see themselves as red?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't, it was never intentional to like make that. He's never like a complete representation of the white male at all. Like, he
just, no, of course not.
Yeah, he just is an example of somebody who is like that. So like I feel bad because people make the assumption that like if there's a character and they see themselves in it, that it's like a direct insult to everybody in that
community. Sure.
Yeah, so
well, but it's reality. There's not, it's not like it's without truth. And the truth is a young white man who, and let's face it, like his family, his dad, it's not like they were poor, like they had something. He inherited something great. Like Point Lavoa was a great place, you know, and then he had abandonment issues because his mom was absent. Mm-hmm. And then his stepmother, who was a person of color in this small community, he was teased about that. And then not only was he teased about that, but then there were these rumors that she was this strange like witch or like a mermaid or something. Mm-hmm. And like, he was teased his whole life about his stepmother. And what I find like funny but also kind of sad is his triggers in the film. Yeah. Is that when anyone calls her his mom, he's like, ah, mama, look. And that was the thing that we found, was that like he is a victim of trauma too, and just never learned how to do shadow work or like how to find his way. And that is a product of that type of stuff. It's abuse, you know, like, and then he's now an abuser, big time, greedy abuser, greed, you know, and like so much better. And I hope that shows in the film. Like we found so many moments about when he would get upset that like his stepmother was called his mom.
It is so funny.
I have not seen the film yet.
Yes. Jesus, see none. except me being like,
just my ADR sessions that I don't want to say because they're so kooky and funny, but there's funny stuff. Like there's just funny stuff that we discovered. And I think the film's
cool thing was working with you that I really took away from, and I think actors should learn from, is that when you talk to me about having multiple takes and how it shouldn't be that you're having multiple takes because you didn't do the first one well. It's because you're giving the director three different options. I really appreciated that. Especially when you're running into like a low budget type of film and you don't have the luxury to have multiple takes. That's where I feel like you stand out from a lot of actors, is that your first take is great, is amazing. And when we do multiple, you're not just repeating that first version. You're giving me a slightly altered. And the beautiful thing is I edit so I can go in and pick out those little subtle moments from each take if I wanted to, or just one take or whatever. But it's, I think I run into with the amateur actors is that they think the number of takes means I do it to perfect my initial take, you know, instead of like I'm doing it to give the director multiple different options for that take, like, oh well, I fucked up on the line or something. I mean, that happens too. I'm not saying that's not an option, but I'm just saying that when you're that good and you can nail it the first time and think about your other takes as a privilege and really use those takes wisely, I think that's what sets you apart from other actors. So that I really appreciate it.
Well, I teach this when I coach other actors and I help actors too. I learned that from someone. And how I was taught that was that like when we think that there's a one take wonder, or we think that there's like, you got medium close up, your coverage, my coverage, and how it turns around. And then you have like the master shot, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that like, if you're an actor, the one thing that you have to focus on is blocking and movement. Get your blocking and movement and know when you're supposed to move on what word and how you do it. And then for your takes, you can change intention.
Yes.
Do the same movement so that they can edit it. But on this one, you come from a place of love. Like, I love this. Or the next one, you come from a place of like greed. Like, I have to take this. And then the other one, you take from a place of like thinking, like, oh, I'm manipulating this. But you can do those different types of intentions as an actor, but keep the movement the same so that when they edit it, you get it. And then when they're editing it as an actor, I'm a supporting actor. I'm not really ever the lead. So like then I'm making the other actor or the lead who I'm communicating with look in different ways. So like in this place, am I being aggressive so that their reactions are like needed, right? Mm-hmm. Or if I'm being funny and they act aggressively, are they overreacting to who I am? And those are like, that's, you get three of them. Like you get three of those options, but it takes six takes to get there because there's blocking and then there's camera angles. And then you got to let everybody else have a mistake. Like the camera didn't move right. Like if it's a moving shot, like you just have to be aware of the whole operation. Like there's the camera, there's this, there's props, there's special effects, there's stunts, there's movement.
Yep.
And then you just have to be consistent in that so it can edit well.
Yes.
And then you give different intentions that are subtle that change how that moment works, if that makes sense.
I love that insight. Because what I did notice, because I edited it, was that you were so consistent. Like sometimes I'd be worried because I'm like, oh, he's dead. But it's the same thing. Your arm was there, was always there. And I don't think I ran into a take where I couldn't use it because you did something different.
I just knew choreography, rehearsal, movement, know your body.
Yes, your movement was always consistent, and you're absolutely right. It's your intention that changed ever so slightly that gave me options. Like, that is something that all actors out there need to hear, because from an editing standpoint, like, if you don't have your movement, you are doing yourself a disservice because that's one less take that I can use. Like, you might have given me an amazing take, but if I can't cut it with all the
other, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Exactly.
If you don't, and this is another thing, and like, it's also, I have a theater background, and then I worked up in theater, but then I got my degree in film and television, was learning how to create a role, like starting from Shakespeare and being an actor and understanding all of that, but then having to understand, like, when you're on stage as a director, where you're supposed to be, like sight lines and all that stuff, and then translating later into film and television, to where takes are takes, rhythm is rhythm. Like, sometimes, like, cutaways are cutaways. Like, you have to just understand how a good actor is an actor who has worn many hats on the film set. And when I met you, I was crafty. Like, I was cooking the meals when we met.
Oh, man. Then, like, I teach a course too. And that is one thing that I keep hammering into them, is that, because I teach it's actually a bunch of actors too, but it's basically how, I don't teach acting. I teach, from a director's standpoint, what would make an actor a good actor for a director, basically, and how you create your own content. And that's the biggest thing I hammer in, is the value of perspective. And the best actors have lost perspective, whether they've done those jobs or they have watched that or observed that or learned about it, because, and the whole class is taking a concept that they write and then they produce and film and everything at the end. It's only like 3 minutes long, but just that exercise enables to appreciate all the different jobs and why it's not about, everything is about how you feel. It's every single thing. Sometimes you have to hit the mark, and that's all we care about, because if you're not in focus, then like, what the fuck, you know? So like, so you nailed it. Yes, it's perspective. And it's the same thing with directing. I say the best directors of AD have been crew. Like, the worst directors of AD are the ones that somehow just someone gave them money and they're directing their first thing, and they have no clue what it takes to do props. They have no clue how long lighting takes or logic or like what, even like, what it takes to act, you know? And like, for example, like, I have AD people who, like, that's their first time working with children, and they think like children can do 10 takes, you know? And you're like, no, you get two at most, if you're lucky. You know, you have 10 minutes of focus, and that's about it. And then I gotta go figure out how to like distract them and like get more focus. But that's the biggest problem with, I think, and you know, I say directors, I say actors, honestly, it translates to any crew too.
It's all the same. Look at Reese, like,
yeah.
And, put our props and did just the things that we had. And yeah. I'm not going to say that this was that much of a low budget film, because there were huge like things that we did that I'd never seen on a film set before.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. making the best of all of it and how we got there. And like, I was fortunate enough to already live there, because I think that probably how my character would have come in, it would have been like, you got 3 days, get this actor in, get out, get out, get out. But
right.
Fortunately, that was my residence at the time. And I lived there, and we could do things. And the thing about this film that like stands out was that we rehearsed scenes and settings.
Yeah.
Before, way before we even filmed them, like that beach scene that we did, I don't
yes.
want to talk about too much more about that, was we rehearsed that twice.
Yep.
In two different places, because we didn't know like what the water levels in the river were going to be. And in both rehearsals, it changed.
It changed. Yep.
But to get to rehearse and to get to do that and to feel safe, and then when we already feel safe, then when we're doing it as movie makers, and then I could work with the stunt coordinator, like when there was a stunt with the cart, remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then like, well, he's a good friend of mine, Isaiah. And he and I had both done this stunt before, that was this other stunt that was just an illusion. And I don't want to say too much. I hope it's in there, but we freaked all you out. Like, we did this thing.
Yes,
like,
okay, I remember.
We knew what it was.
Yeah.
And it was just about like standing, because the camera doesn't know depth like we do. It's just like foreground, middle ground, background, right? And then y'all were standing way in front of the foreground, and we knew how to position it to like just freak y'all out.
It freaked me out. For sure.
And the howl, like, and the scream, like, oh, and the running.
Yeah, I was like, Jason got hit. Right. And you're like laughing. Yeah.
But it was funny, you know, because, you know, he's one of my best friends, and we knew how to do that. I felt safe, and that's not going to happen on every set, but
right.
It those types of things. Like, this is a heavy stunt movie.
Surprisingly.
Like, there were stunts yeah. that could kill people that we did.
This is true. Yeah, you know? What we did looks like we had at least $2 million.
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah, because...
Well, just some of the fights.
Like, yeah.
It, and you know what, like, you allowed me to do something as an actor. And honestly, I want to go back to the thing about the three takes and the three different ways. Like, you're a mindful person, a feeling person, and a
I'm an empath. Yeah.
And like a taking person. Like, this is the three types of takes you could take. I learned that from Steve Carell.
Oh.
And I was working on a movie that John Stewart had written called Irresistible. And
right.
It's Steve wow. Carell.
That's crazy.
And a lot of our takes were like all improv, but at the time that I was directing.
Really? That, I didn't know that.
Oh, I loved it. And that's where he told me, and I watched him do it. And like when between takes, he would sit down with me and he would work with me.
Mm.
And I was just floored by it all.
Right.
And you know, I think the movie's a great movie, but watching him work and seeing how he does and how they do their three takes, but he does it from a place that makes him look like an asshole, that makes him look like an innocent child, and then makes it look like he knows everything that's going on and he's totally in control. And they would do those takes and he would improv a little bit, but not change it. But the thing that stayed consistent was movement.
Mm-hmm.
You can't throw right. in a new movement, because you can't edit it if it doesn't work in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's cool.
And it was through working with him and him explaining the process, and John Stewart as well, who had wrote the movie Irresistible. It is a great movie. It came out at a weird time that didn't work, but I learned so much from him doing that.
So I want to ask you, is because you've done a lot, how common is it for a director to let an actor improv?
Well, I can only speak to my experience. I've done a movie that's completely improv, and we were nominated for 3 Academy Awards for that movie. The movie's called 99 Homes. It stars Michael Shannon and Laura Dern and Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
And it was written and directed by oh my god, I'm such a
99
Homes. Ramin, he's the head of the film program at Columbia.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he did another movie called Chop Shop, but it's called 99 Homes.
I see it. Yep.
You've seen that movie? That movie's
completely. No, I haven't seen it. I'm looking it up.
It's completely improv.
Really?
We knew what we were going to do. It's completely improv. So when we would do scenes, it would be like we get little information or whatever. We didn't know our characters. We didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, go. And then like everyone's just improvising together, and you know the situation is about the housing crisis in Florida.
Yeah.
The audition process was totally improvised.
Wow.
And that's what made me go to Second City. I did that movie and I was so terrified of improv.
Yeah.
And then about 3 years ago, when I moved to Chicago because I got accepted into the Second City School of Improv. And then I learned all about improv and doing that. And then COVID hits.
Yeah.
And then we come back. But I've worked on two movies with Jay Roach. Jay Roach directed a movie I was
in
with Will Ferrell called The Campaign. It was Zach Galifianakis and Will Ferrell. That was mostly improv. There was no script. And then Trumbo with...
Bryan Cranston.
Cranston, yeah. That was an improv movie. Like it was
really.
Yeah.
Really?
My scenes were with, and they were kind of like not, they weren't important. Like I'm a little, you can see me, I'm kind of edited out of the movie because
it watched didn't work. I don't remember seeing
I don't yeah, I'm anything. Trying to remember.
I was just like I was a little bit part in one scene, and for 3 days on set, I worked with Dakota Fanning's little sister, I can't think of her name, Elle Fanning,
yeah.
And then one day we were there, like she was young, like her mom was there with her and she was in school in between takes, like her tutor came to like work with her because she was in school.
Yeah.
And but then it was Angelina Jolie's birthday. And then she had a present for her, and we were in New Orleans, and so Angelina Jolie comes to the set to accept her birthday present from Dakota.
I did actually see Trumbo. I don't, because I didn't know you then. I didn't look at
you. You won't see me from it. I only got that role because it was Jay Roach. I worked with Jay Roach on The Campaign with Will Ferrell.
That's awesome.
It's funny though, because I'm looking, I'm like, I know lots of people in this. I just saw Bryan Cranston in Power of Sale, and he's so awesome. And it's a play, and it goes back to you saying that you have theater training, and it can skew both ways. Like sometimes people who've only done theater, I feel like will go like too big, you know. But like I've had some great experiences working with people from theater, because it's that aspect of you only get one, right? In the theater performance, I think.
Well, there's just not good theater training in the United States.
Yeah.
But you know, like most of the actors that we like, unfortunately, they're not, like most of our actors that we really rely on that we like they come from RADA. They're English and they're Australian or they're Canadian. Yeah. And they are, but that's good training programs for theater. It's not like hoedown theater from different places, but theater training is theater training, but like really good theater training is really good theater training. And I was fortunate that I had really good theater training for
Second
a while.
City is,
and I did it for a while.
Yeah. Second City is like, that's where people go to SNL from, or
yes,
like,
absolutely.
Like
yeah.
Go to crazy. Like I think Will Ferrell came from there too. Right.
Yeah. So did Steve Carell. So all
Carell, of them, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how he met Adam McKay too. I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Adam McKay, he's a director. He directed Don't Look Up and all those movies. Cool. Yeah. I mean, like it's an interesting like medium acting, because like it's kind of, because I've thought about this like a lot, especially on the last set that I worked on. Like I feel like there's not really proper training with any any position in crew for Phil.
No, because it's such a, I mean, you learn by doing. That's the problem.
Yeah, I feel like everything, what it is by experience. You start off on like the crazy student film sets or like the small like feature
super make it work. Budget make it work.
Sets. Yeah. And whatever you make, yeah, exactly. Whatever you make work, the mistakes you learn along the way is your experience.
Yeah,
it's pretty fucked up, but I mean, it's the best way to learn.
One way to do things. That's the beauty and the craziness of art is that there's literally not one way to do something. So like, okay, let's say you make a certain method standard. Who is to say that you can't achieve the same result in a completely different way? You know?
No, you're right.
Yeah.
And we did that in this film many times. Like,
oh yeah,
we didn't know how those river scenes were going to work. And there was no time to do it. And so like, is it going to be in the pool? Is it going to be in the ditch behind the pool? Is it going to be in the river by the beach? And like, we kept moving around and like, it, like, if you don't know it and like, in, I don't know. Like, since I lived there, there was, I don't know if I should say this. Remember that beautiful artist she brought in that was the, she's an actual mermaid. Like she swims as a mermaid.
Yes,
like,
yes.
What Amanda. Was her name? Amanda.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, Amanda McFarland.
And nothing to like say that Layla wasn't beautiful. I have a picture. It's not here.
No, Layla's beautiful. Layla's just not a professional mermaid.
No, but this woman was, and she sat there. But then, like, where you wanted to do that scene, because I live there, like, I know that's where the snakes are. And I was like, and y'all went there. I'm like, oh, my God, like, they can't be in that. And she totally did. And I didn't say anything, but that was a dangerous spot. Well,
that's why I had two people going in, or one, like Greg going in there and like looking for scaring off snakes. And
oh, Greg, oh my God, how is he? Do you talk to him?
I have not recently. He does.
Greg, if you're watching, just a swift.
Yeah, he's not good at the social medias or really.
No, but we love him. We shout him out almost every episode so far with all the cast. Like even Layla, shout him out. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the best.
The Swiss Army knife. Like whatever.
Oh, well, yeah,
when I met you, you thought that I was just the chef cooking food for everybody. I don't even think you knew I was an actor.
I had no clue. No.
Yeah.
Until we did Half Lives, and then. And I wonder what you thought when you saw me, like, what's this motherfucker doing?
I was blown away.
Yeah, that's kind of exciting too. And you know what, playing this role, I did something as an actor, and we communicated a little bit, but like, you know, it's a feminist show. It's not about this broken man. I played Officer Krupke in West Side Story for the New Orleans Opera. One year, like the year of Katrina, and I did a couple of interviews.
That's a great character, though. Krupke.
Thank you. Right?
Yeah. I love West Side Story. That's like one of my favorite shows.
And I did a couple of like radio interviews, and they're like, "Well, for the average listener, tell us what West Side Story is about." And I said, "Well, it's about this cop." And there's these unruly kids, and he's just trying to make peace in the neighborhood. Right.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And it's perspective, right?
You're right. You're totally right.
So how I wanted Rhett to be in my mind, and this is how I felt like whenever me and Christine, like I probably bugged the shit out of her and Camille, but
I don't know, to me, but we like that though.
When I read the script, I saw this as this feminist like sort of spoof, like the Wayans brothers would do. Like Scary Movie. And like, I feel like the movie's kind of making fun of feminist tropes. Mm-hmm. And then you have this character as abusive boyfriend. You have this character who's a lesbian and she's tough. And then you have this character who had drug addiction she came back from. And then all of these different things were sort of wrapped up in the movie. And then my character name was Rhett, which if you think about like the classic, like anti-like feminist movie, which is Gone with the Wind. I just thought it was so like ironically silly. Like I was like, this is freaking funny, right? And then it's Urshuli, which I have such a personal relationship to, like Once Upon This Island, like the whole like Little Mermaid story, and growing up with Disney, like Little Mermaid, such a huge part of like my life as like hey, it loving was a like huge story part
of mine too. I had a whole room decked in Little Mermaid stuff, like
well, and the fact that like
bedspread everything.
But the villain of Little Mermaid and the Ursula. Folklore of that character is the hero of our movie.
Yes.
You know, that comes from this Haitian sort of folklore that, like, if you're a bad man, this woman's going to come from the sea and punish you.
Right.
You know, and that's Haitian folklore. So, like, when I read all this stuff, I was like, oh, this is brilliant. Like, it was funny. It was scary. But at the same time, I just thought it was so fucking smart. It's just smart. It's a smart movie.
Thank you. Yes. And then, it's very a lot of Camille. I knew I wanted to work with her because of the amount of detail she takes into doing the research. So we both complement each other. So I'm more of a technical person. When it comes to film stuff, technical, with directing, with camera, whatever. And so she would be very focused on like a lot of the dialogue and the backstory and stuff. And I would be focused on the beats. So she'd have this like 5-page dialogue scene. And I'm like, wait, let's add, because I'm thinking like from a visual perspective of what they're doing, what will make it interesting on camera. I'm like, okay, while they're doing this, let's have them do this, then do this, then do this, and do this, and hit these beats type thing. And so like you should have heard us trying to strategize why certain characters would end up at the river house and how they would how all the storylines could all meld together and why you could conceivably believe that all these characters are on the same property and that they all run into each other or don't run into each other. It was like a whole thing, but I'm glad you picked up on the subtleties, because we definitely talked in great lengths about all of that. So, yay!
Well, I just think it's beautiful. I think it is it's a metamorphosis story, and as all mermaid stories are like metamorphosis stories, but even my character. And so, it was the first time that I did this thing, and I got to have this opportunity to have a character that starts in the beginning and then ends in the end. It was like, what's the character's arc? Like, what do they go through? And I've, as an actor, like mapped out what scene was what and where his story would be. But I wanted to play with making this character grow. And like in the beginning, when you meet him, he's kind of just this like buffoonish, goofy, like small little idiot. But then he grows with his greed, and he grows with his obsession and his self-hate and his just feelings of like no one's ever loved him, no one's ever identified with him, to being like the only way he could satisfy it was to conquer women, to have power, and drug use.
Right.
And then at the end, he's this huge monster. And I look at like the thought of like when you first meet him and he's like the little kooky, like whatever, stupid guy that couldn't tie his shoes in the gift shop. That's kind of, he's got the hots for Wendy. And like he thinks that he's going to get with Wendy.
Right.
And it doesn't work out, I would say.
Yeah. But ignorance prevails.
I don't want to give too much away, but then hopefully you get to see this character grow from this bumbling like idiot to this very scary person who you cannot trust, that is a dangerous person, like with the type of person that would go into, if he got fired from his job, sit for a couple of days and get mad and go back and kill everybody. Like,
yep.
That's what I wanted him. I wanted to do that as an actor. I hope it works.
No, that's he has a ticking time bomb.
Yes.
He's got a switch. And you never
know. But it still triggers that he's not responsible for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part. It's like, he is redeemable because he's just an abused soul like everyone else. And could
he just veered the wrong path, basically.
Well, yeah. But there's triggers. There's triggers. Like triggers, everyone has triggers. And he has abandonment issues.
Yeah.
And then not fitting into his little community with like the crazy witchy mermaid stepmom who's not white. Like he was teased and bullied. Like I don't know. Like I know that like it's because I played the character and I have to love him, but he's just actually very misunderstood.
Well, yeah. I mean, like any other character, probably like fundamentally flawed, but that I feel like that can be applied to any character, you know, even in Ursula, you know. But that's like kind of like the point, the impetus of it is working through that, especially together, you know, overcoming evil, you know.
But what creates evil? And like we all have triggers. We all have triggers, and everyone has emotional triggers, and we all have trauma. Like no matter what, everyone has trauma. Like if you hit your head and you had the most perfect family, you still have trauma.
Yeah.
The level of trauma, like you can't really define. And this guy has had a lot of trauma, and he's never had his feelings validated. That's how I approached him. And he is the villain. He is the bad guy, but he's a broken, crippled, like product of other things, you know, even though he is really bad. But I wanted to play with hopefully seeing him grow. Like in the first scenes, I was hunched down and like I wanted to be lower than everyone.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment when you'll see that he kind of grows and then he towers. And then all of a sudden, this idiot you think is an idiot. He's this huge monster. And,
ominous, yeah.
And Camille, oh my God. And Roxanne, we would like, there's things that Roxanne would do. And like, of course, I'm not Layla and I did not have to sit in the chair like she did. But, you know, and Roxanne would sit with me and she goes, well, how much, what do you want? I go, on this one, he hasn't slept in 2 days. So like really, really dark circles. And then Camille would come and we would put like Vaseline in my hair, make me look greasy and gross. And then that freaking shirt that like, I loved everything about it. Like there wasn't like,
yeah,
it was like, we had to sneak in that like costume thing. Like I wish I still had that shirt. And Alicia, bless her heart, man. Like I did give it back. And that shirt is a very important shirt. That's another story for like Alicia and John. But.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think what is cool too is that you're so involved with every aspect of your character. And I think that comes from understanding how each department can add to a character, right? And I think that was really cool that, you know, from the start for the, because Camille was also wardrobe, and we would talk through like, what do we think that this character is there, you know, type thing. And I think we were like,
I was totally wrong. Well, when we first came to it, remember, I'm like, no, he doesn't think he's country. He thinks this. And then Camille sat with me and like, I think we had a couple of beers and we sat around, like, remember the rocking chairs around the fire? And she's like, no, that like he would wear this because he wants to be this is how cool people look here. And we went, we looked and we found it like, oh, you're right. Even though he thinks he's smarter, he still looks like everybody else.
Yeah. It's the whole, like, you can't take the country out of, you know, he has his own version of what he thinks is it. Yeah.
But he still thinks that everyone's an idiot.
Yeah.
And that night, our first kind of rehearsal, I think that when I got to meet the girls, like Zoe, Layla, Diana, Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, is there anyone else? Doesn't it seem like the cast is bigger? So Zoe, Diana, Courtney, and Layla.
Elizabeth.
I miss Elizabeth. Oh my God, Elizabeth.
Shout out to Elizabeth. Last week we had her on the podcast.
Sorry.
We love you, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, yes. You know what? Like, if I was Dorothy, like, she is my scarecrow. Like, I miss her the most. Like, I felt like I connected with Elizabeth the most that first dinner we had. And it was like camp. But anyway, that first rehearsal, and I was like, okay. And so I talked to Camille, and I'm like, oh, okay, I got you. And it was in that little cabin that they all lived in. And that's where we did those one scenes in that like red cabin by the thing. And I decided I was going to show up in costume and my hair was done. And like for that rehearsal, do you remember that?
Yeah. They were like, holy shit.
Like, and then I was no longer Jason. Like I was now Red.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how I was introduced. And I think that everyone was just a little afraid of me, but it was acting. It was fun. Like,
Backing.
Backing. I did a video on backing. Did we talk about backing?
No. You got to talk about backing.
Backing. So backing is this joke that I have a video and I'll post it to you. It's just like, so bad acting. And it's like, if you're ever in a scene and like, you can't see your face and it's like, something surprising happened. It's like, backing. It's a real thing and I teach it. Like you find me online and like, I'll teach you how to back. Rehearsals were good. The time crunch didn't feel as bad because we knew the scene before we got in there to freaking film it, you know?
Yeah. And that was a big strategy of mine. I knew that the schedule that we were fortunate to have, and unfortunate because it was so short, for all those listening who have been following, it was 11 days of shooting. And this is with stunts, with location. This is in the woods. It was a lot. The only way it was possible was because I had a 1 week of on-site prep, and I was very adamant about having this on-site prep because of my experience of ADing on site the summer previously. And I believe, I've been listening to a lot of DGA podcasts about other directors and their strategy, and it's a nice even mix. Some people are like, we don't like rehearse because it's got to be organic, and some people are like very, very like rehearse. I would say I'm in between. I think what I believe is that if you're prepared, like if you do prep, then you have the luxury of exploring. You have more, you're able to explore because you're not taking the time to figure things out on the fly, right?
Because you already got comfortable, you can get it a little more exciting. Yeah.
It's a little bit easier to improv because you already know the line.
The beats.
You're not figuring out the motivation. You're not figuring out all that stuff on the fly.
No.
So you already know what it is. And so then you have the luxury to explore.
And I felt that our rehearsals were great just because they're rehearsals and we got to figure out each other out. But the camera crew, like your camera crew was like this militia, this military that came in and knew what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. And they were going to do it. And like figuring all that stuff out because there's water, there was that little cabin was that like you couldn't move walls. Like that's what it was. And I feel so bad that I don't remember a single Ryan. I don't remember a single.
So we had
anybody in the camera crew.
Was our director of photography, who is amazing, who lives in New York. I had AD him on a feature prior to that. That was actually a horror feature called 1, 2, 3. So, but I'd known his work for a long time and followed it. He does beautiful, beautiful work. And then we had our first AC, which was Thomas Campbell, who's awesome. And then his second AC was Nick DeMuth. And they were great because these two guys were like totally designed for the woods. They had Camera Island, or Camera Camp is what we would call it, but they had the
Island setups. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, Camera Island as well. But they were like camping out of their car. Like that's their thing, is camping. So it was pretty cool. They knew what they were doing. And like, also honestly, kudos to Eli, our gaffer.
Yes, Eli. Yes, Eli.
He's one of the hardest working guys ever.
Oh man, Eli, I need to talk to him. I have a t-shirt for him that I have it with me. Like I got to give it to Eli.
Now Eli was awesome. And then our key grip was Roy Farthing. And the just it was a really nice team of people who knew what they were doing and were willing to think outside of the box to figure out ways to make things work in a difficult environment.
I'm coming to Austin. I cannot make it to the pool party.
Okay.
Although I want to.
Yes.
It's too expensive. Like, we're traveling all around. Now I'm in Oklahoma. This is my cabin. I got a log cabin in the woods in Oklahoma with my girlfriend. And this is where we live. We work from here. I audition. I've got a couple of cool projects that are coming out pretty soon. And just, you know, as an actor right now, I do 3 or 4 auditions a week. It's not easy. Like, I want all of them. And then you just send it out. And then, like, this is like, you don't get to go into a room and audition with anybody anymore. It's all through this.
Zoom. Yeah.
And then just Roxanne and like her putting like Coke residue on my nose. And I feel so bad that the PA who like was the stripper that like I actually sniffed a line of Coke off of.
Nikki.
I can't remember. Nikki, I love
Nikki.
You.
Oh, really?
Oh, my
oh,
God.
Hilarious. I didn't
Do you remember when you were in that scene? Like, oh, I guess you were, making, you were making the next set.
I am.
Oh, it was funny. That was, what is it? Daddy's on payroll.
Daddy's on a payroll.
Yeah. Roll up to the club. Oh, I love that role. And then.
Dude, I love that scene so much.
I can't wait.
That scene is so funny. I remember being like, I know this is going to work. But then seeing, because Colby had been our on-site editor / JIT and everything. He had been editing like live basically on the site. And I remember going to see it after shooting, and I laughed so
And Lisa, was that her name? What was her, the
it was Lisa
was Roxanne's assistant. Like, she's so beautiful. Her name was Lisa. I loved her.
Yes.
And it was a close set, and it was so much fun.
So fun.
I kidnapped not Lisa,
Nikki
one night, and I told her, like, we're not going back, we're running away. She goes, I have to. Like,
she's so sweet. I didn't know that she was so scared of it. She played
terrified.
It off well.
Terrified.
Yeah. Then
she's beautiful. Yeah, just like, beautiful.
Yeah. But I didn't think of it. Because she has this like amazing, bubbly personality. And I was like, when I was writing, I was like,
brave. Oh. She just seems brave. Like, she talks to you
brave.
Like she's a professional wrestler. Like, we're going to do it. But then she's also delicate and beautiful, like a woman.
Yeah, she's great. She just comes up with such a strong, brave, whether it's facade or whatever, it fooled me.
She's just brave.
So when I wrote it with Camille, I immediately was like, oh, I know who's going to play this role. I specifically wrote that scene for Nikki.
Really? That's hilarious.
Yeah, I wasn't having
it. Was fun. It was fun. And like the little, the mermaid thing she had to wear. So like, I can't.
Yeah. Well, Nikki has like the best boobs. Yeah, I knew that. And I was like, all right, we're going to put this. We got to have this. Yeah. So.
And one of my like, I don't know. There's a picture of me. Have you ever seen that picture of me and Layla like just messing around and like I make it look like I'm naked? It's like my bar, my rules.
Yes, I did see that. Yeah,
like those pictures
exactly.
are great because it's funny to think about like the like dynamics of like what our characters are in the movie.
Yeah,
I love all these women so much. It was so much fun. And I love you. And Adam, you were great from the beginning when we had that.
Hey.
I have so many pictures. I got to find like the picture. I took so many pictures of everyone, especially that first night when we went and ate at that restaurant.
Yes, the restaurant.
Right.
Mom,
yeah.
Not your mama's
but,
or mama's or whatever it was called. Yeah.
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 That not your fun. Mama's. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I just miss Carly.
Yeah.
I miss her
Carly's
so
an
much.
MVP. Yeah.
Yeah, Carly's an MVP. They're all everybody on that set, but
Francis
my girls,
too. Yeah.
Yeah, my girls are MVPs because they have to deal with me. and well, my crazy ideas. Yeah.
Right.
You know, Carly has, I fucked with her really hard all the time, and she knew I was like, she was like in charge of me, getting me places, and then like if she wasn't looking, I would run and hide from her. And she's like, "God damn!" And like, she's just like, "Get here, be there." Like, and it was just messing with her because she's just got
so good
patience
at
of a saint.
I know, and so incredibly good at her job,
and just organized and knows what's going on, and just does not let emotion affect her.
Yeah, no, she was a rock star.
Where is she? I'm so bad about keeping up with everybody, but like,
yeah,
I think honestly, to tell you the truth, Diana is the one that I sort of like, other than you, that I talk to the most, and it's always through like, share this post, like this post, like how you doing, like, and
yeah, the whole team on that, they were all rock stars. They but it was, you don't know, like my first film was 10 years ago. Roxy was on it. Roxy's my roommate, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. And Kelly was also on that first set 10 years ago. And so I've been waiting for the moment to make Ursley, or it really, but I knew that I had been handpicking people for about 10 years to be on this project, basically. And so this would not have been possible with any other group of people. It's just we.
Oh, I believe it. I believe that. Yeah,
it was picked specifically with people who knew their shit, but were great, nice people. And,
but then also some people that were training and learning that got to have an experience of a lifetime and saw something great. Like, it wasn't like you only got like old pros, like you gave very green people opportunities to do very great things, and everyone sort of delivered. It was so short, you know, like,
what's today?
Like, we're April what? Today is April 10th, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right now would be the day that we're doing that Zoom motherfucking audition.
Yeah.
Wow. And then you're like, the producer hates you. You're never going to make it. We're like, what? Like, this was then. That's how quick it was.
Yeah.
Like, this is the month.
We haven't.
When's your birthday?
Anniversary yet.
When's your birthday?
April 28th. Yeah, that's when we started.
It's coming up. Like, it's coming up.
Yeah. But isn't that crazy that, like, we haven't even hit our 1-year anniversary on this film?
It's coming.
Yeah. The 28th was when we started prep. Because I know because we had a beautiful, one of the best, probably the best birthdays I've ever had on set.
And, well, your cake was pretty freaking cool.
It was freaking phenomenal.
And a trash bag full of crawdads.
And listen to this.
You know that
your
cake was so delicious that, like, I knew where you put it. Like, I got some of it and hid it and put it in Ziploc bags and hid it in my freezer in my house because it was so good. I ate all that cake also.
Yes.
It was a good freaking cake. We got to find a picture of that thing. It was cool. It was a sculpture.
Yeah, it was a sculpture. It was like one of those, like, ace, what's that show that does?
I know, Cake Boss or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of those cakes. I was like, how the fuck did you guys find this? Yeah. No, it was, it's crazy to think that I've been with this film for so long, and every step of it, every little decision, that it feels like it's been like 3 years, to the point where somebody was talking to me and I kept referring to when we shot this as like a few years before. I kept saying we shot this in 2020 or something. And then I was like, wait, no, it's
not even a year.
1 year, almost a year, yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think, like, I did ADR, like, God, what was that? Like, it was a long time ago when I did my ADR stuff.
But it wasn't.
No.
Doesn't it seem like my life has changed?
That's been a long time ago. So many things have happened. I've seen y'all's faces so many times. Yeah. Oh, I want to tell you this so that when you go and watch it for the first time.
Okay, all right.
So the scene where you are running into the house, because we know why you're running into the house, trying to say. This is when we when you discover something's missing.
When the ATV is gone, my all-terrain vehicle.
Yeah. So the music.
Oh no.
Okay. So the music, I specifically had something I wanted, and it was what's his face? God damn it. I just had
Clayton. Clayton Q.
No, it was he's 80s. Just retired.
Was it like
Miami Vice? Phil Collins.
Phil Collins.
Dude.
Something.
So Phil Collins' song, in tonight, what was it? Is it
in the air tonight?
In the air tonight. That song I played for you, right?
Like, yes. In the air tonight was the inspiration.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. So I went and I was like, all right, Nick, our composer. I was like,
was it the bluegrass version?
I was like, this is the song that I want it to embody. Brett in the scene is in the air tonight because it's so traumatic. Like,
yeah, they're onto him. He thinks that the he's gone. Like, he's the feds are onto him for like whatever he's done. I'm like,
he's gone rogue.
So now that you
he's so afraid.
Yeah,
daddy's on the payroll.
Yeah, now that you guys know that that's the inspiration for that scene, music wise, I'm interested to know what you think when you guys actually watch it. So,
well, what's funny is like our music, you and I spoke through music so much in this movie. Yeah. And then it was that like if you said you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. Like, we talked about that song. And then the other one was like, roll up to the club. Yep. In
and then
night.
And then you gotta remember the
Cocaine Country Dancing.
The dance one. Never Gonna Let Me Down.
Oh, I'm never gonna let. Well, what is that? Never Gonna Break My Stride. Oh, I can't think of it.
You got to keep on moving.
Never Gonna Break My Stride.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That was like
a huge theme in there.
It was our earworm. We couldn't get rid of it, right? Yes. Never Gonna Break My Stride. Got to keep on moving. Oh, that Carly, that's for you. That's for Carly.
Yeah.
Shout out to Carly.
Music was a huge, people don't know because it wasn't deliberately put it, but music.
Because you can't, but you can't, it was a part of all of us.
Yes.
Never Gonna Break My Stride. I love that song. That's Carly.
All the characters had their own playlists that they curated themselves as their character. That they were like, this is what I embody. And so like, that's something I think that was really cool too. So.
Well, I also like kind of like did a thing, not in every scene, but like when I just had to like make a French scene or like I had to enter to a scene, I always was singing a song. Like, you don't know what it is.
Yeah, like a theme song.
Like, he's always singing something. Like, you never know what it was.
What were you envisioning when you ran into the house? Because, like, several things crossed my mind. Like, Mission Impossible.
When I was scared?
Yeah, when you come in and you're, like, you're freaked out. Like, one of the songs that kept popping up when I showed Nick Mission Impossible song and also Phil Collins Into the Air Tonight. So,
well, that's tone and that's intention that like my character didn't think, but like the song that was going on in his mind constantly was "He's Down About, Go Ahead."
Catch that bandit, run.
Catch that bandit. We got a long way to go
and a short time to get there.
Yeah. Well, it was also like, it is a great song. You know what? Yeah. Actually, last night at the skating rink, they did play that song and I did skate to it.
Oh, that's a great skating rink song. You kidding me?
It was, they were doing like different age levels of like races. And so like all the girls from up to 10, come out here. And they're like, you got to do two laps and who won one? And like, I did not race. I did not race. But my girlfriend's daughter, you know, she's such a city girl. We're stuck here in the country. But last night we went to dinner and we took her roller skating. And then after roller skating, we took her to like the bowling alley, like arcade. Mm-hmm. And it was like 10 o'clock. And I'm like, I've got a podcast in the morning, so we gotta go home. Like, I had to destroy the fun. But.
It's funny that you bring up the roller skater rink and stuff, because these were all locations that we had explored for having like a some of our screenings, because I That is the vibe. It's this like 90s throwback.
Yes, feel. Xanadu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Living Newton John, of course it is.
Yeah.
It's gotta be.
That for me, when I was prepping for it and stuff, I watched a lot of 90s, like Spielberg was a big, huge thing for me. Well, there's a lot of shots that we weren't able to do because of time and whatever, but like his way of directing and I watched Jurassic Park, I watched E.T., I watched John.
Well, E.T., like this movie does remind me of E.T., and I would say that, like, it is E.T. And if everybody go back and watch E.T. now, just go back and watch E.T. now. And we all think that that's a beautiful movie.
Beautiful movie.
Yeah. But
they had blue screen technology. It's the first time they had that sort of like floating, you can do like double exposure type of like special effects. Look at how he introduces the bad guys. And there is no bad guy in E.T., by the way. But it's just like hip shots, flashlights. Like you don't really ever see the bad guy. You never really see anything. Most of it's just like a dwarf in a costume.
Yeah.
There's a couple of like claymation type stuff. But that storytelling of that movie is based on, okay, for example, you know, I've watched it now as an adult. There's a scene where like you learn that like the thing about Elliot and E.T. is that they're connected like telepathically.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And so then E.T.'s learning and watching TV at home alone, and he discovers beer and he's drinking beer. And like Elliot's at school.
Yeah.
And he gets drunk and they're dissecting frogs. And he's like, I gotta save the frogs. And then he's watching that movie with they have that romantic kiss and the girl's too tall. And like the little boy says, he stands on top of the boy and he kisses the girl. And he's mimicking all that stuff. Like it took nothing to do that. Those were frogs. Like if you think about it, but that scene is the catapult for like showing you that like Elliot, the hero, is larger than this.
Yeah.
And then I do love E.T. It is one of my favorite movies. And it was not a very expensive movie to make. He had a lot of movie to do it, but you can make beautiful movies with stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just storytelling and perspective and like being creative. I think there's something beautiful about working with limited resources, because it forces you to problem solve creatively.
And
I think
some
of the best storytelling comes from creatively fixing your problems.
Extreme parameters.
Oh yeah.
Like if somebody told you have all the money in the world, you have nothing, you can have anything you want, and you have to do this movie, you're like, ugh. But if they said you only have this much money, you can only do it here, you can't have this, you can only have this, and then you're like, oh, I have to work through these parameters. I'm going to be creative now because I understand what my restrictions are. That's a way better way to work than having everything at your anything.
I think
love this movie. I love this movie. It's smart. It's beautiful. These actresses are gorgeous. You're beautiful. Like I'm more excited about just getting to go see all these lovely women that I worked with, and Adam and Reese. But like,
of course,
I'm excited. I forget that.
I hope Carly gets to come. Tell her I love her. Like I just miss her all the time. I wish I had her with me all the time, because I do so many stupid things. I'm like, oh, if Carly's here, I've never done that.
I forget that a lot of you guys haven't seen it. Because I've seen it so many freaking times. So it's going to be amazing to see how you guys react to it. Yeah, and I really hope that it's everything, if not more, than what you guys are expecting.
Well, everyone in my life right now, every woman in my life right now, spans from the age of 6 to almost 15, and they all are obsessed with mermaids. They're all obsessed with like empowerment and like women stuff, and like, so I love them, and so like they bring me along because I love them, and I feel that I am for female empowerment as well. I want to be a feminist, and I think that this is a feminist story. And everyone goes through metamorphosis.
Yes.
And the idea of toxic metamorphosis and then like genuine metamorphosis,
right,
and then like self-empowered metamorphosis, this story tells all of it. And then like so many things in my life right now that I've accepted was because I met all of you and I did this movie, like burning Palo Santo wood, or like, I just got all this like beautiful furniture, and it's like, we had to sage it, and then like, we have an altar over here. Like, I wish I could just show you this crazy cabin, but this whole, like the witchy vibe is one of the hashtags on this that like, my girlfriend Melody, she loves, I can't wait for you to meet her. You're gonna love her. And then just, it's the first time in my life where it's like, I'm around more females than I am men. And yeah. I dig it. I really dig it. I've learned so much about myself and letting go. And letting go doesn't mean releasing or pushing away. It just means letting go.
Yeah.
You know, don't hold on to something. Trying to make something fit. Like COVID sucked. And you know, like I'm speaking in code a little bit. You knew where I was living. I don't know what I was holding on to, but it wasn't for me. And I don't own any of that, but I'm very proud of it. And I love those people and I love everybody, but COVID was hard. I mean, not to be dramatic, but like,
no, it COVID was hard for everybody. And that's why like, I'm excited for this film to make a splash out in the world, because I specifically wanted a film that people coming out of the pandemic would have a good time hanging out together and watching it in a non, like, just a fun, in a fun environment.
It's silly.
To question what is watching films? Does it have to be where you don't talk to each other in the theater, buttoned up at a film festival? No, it can be like you're getting plastered, drinking, and watching. And that's how I want this film to be experienced. I want it to be like, hey,
a social.
The social. It's we have a whole drinking game like designed around it. I want this.
What is a drinking game? What is it?
Oh, your lines are a lot of them. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No.
Yes. So like she's not my mama.
Everything. Oh no. Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. So,
and that's so sad because it hurt me so much as an actor to like, everyone laughed anytime I said that, but like to me it hurt that she was my mom. You let me improv. I want to go back to that. Like we would rehearse and we would do the scenes and everything, and then like, and then you would be like, well, just improv. And I would go off and like do stuff, and everyone, like we would cut and like everyone would giggle like they were laughing and like, what happened? Like we were just like saying some truths there for a second. But
well, I think what is interesting is when we think of comedy, I think people think, oh, you're trying to be funny, right? Or you're trying to say lines that are funny and stuff. And what I loved about how you specifically told me how comedy is that you actually were in there and you as a character, as that person, did not feel those situations were funny.
Oh, no.
It was the situation itself with the lines and how you deliver it that made it funny, but you weren't going in there to be like, all right, let's try this so we can get a laugh.
When you would cut and everyone would laugh, I would be surprised sometimes.
Yeah.
But y'all thought it was so funny. I'm like, but like, you know, it was.
Yeah. And I think that was the beauty of it. I think that's what like stood out from the performance was that you weren't trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Right? You were, because you were that character. And as that character in that situation, you were reacting from a genuine place of how that character would react in that place, not because you're trying to get a laugh. And I think you pointed that out to me, saying that like, that's where you saw some of the issues or with actors you've dealt with, is that when they go into comedy, they think that their job is to figure out how to get people to laugh, when in reality, it's more just how do you genuinely become that character and react as that character would and let the rest of it make it funny type thing.
Well, I didn't feel like anyone was trying to be funny. Like, there was never, like, and when funny moments were, it was out of the absurdity of it all.
The absurd.
Mm-hmm. There was, I had improv this one line, it's offensive, like, I hope it's in there. And I'm like, poor Sally, like, she's so, like, we're at the beach, and, like, I would fling her over my shoulder, like, she was the most, like, beautiful, like, bait that I thought the mermaid would come for him. And we were trying to figure out that scene between the two cars, and they're all like handcuffed to the top. And I said, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a lesbo by the toe. And I grabbed her, but I was thinking that that was the most horrible, awful thing that you could say in the moment. And when you cut, people fell down laughing and screaming because that was an improv. I'm like, I wasn't trying to be funny. That's just awful.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I do remember that.
And it was shocking.
Brilliant. Yeah.
But you did have to like consult people and say, like, can we say that? Like, you had to, like, we had to wait to see if that was an improv that can happen.
It was great. No, there's so many moments like that that are just like, I thought some of the best moments came from the improv, which.
Well,
highly about all the actors that we had. So
it was some great improv moments.
Yeah, it's funny because like Camille and I will fight on this because I'm very much she's a very writer, right? Like,
well, she is because she's smart. Like, yeah. The script is brilliant. Like, there's so
we co-wrote it, but she's very much a like, I wrote these specific lines for a specific reason for a specific cadence. Meanwhile, I've learned how to write from the way I direct, right? And so for me, the script has always been more of a guideline than it is like the Bible, right? So she's like, the word is the Bible. I'm very much like, no, that's a guideline, and then you can work within that guideline. So we would butt heads on set sometimes in a good way. We would come to I think butting heads is not a bad thing. I think you go in and you push and pull, tug of war until you find a beautiful compromise or, you know, like that.
Well, and she also stayed off the set a lot.
Yeah. Well, probably because I annoyed the shit out of her when I started to alter the script. So I like improv. I like, because I always.
You came from that.
I came from that, and I never trusted myself as a writer. And I always believed that the actors will know more about the character. A good actor eventually will know more about the character than I did when I started writing it, right? And so that's why I love leaning into improv, because of that. Camille is very different. She's very much she's confident in her writing. She's done that backstory.
She's a good writer, right?
And she is very particular with the way she writes and very strategic about it. And so she's thought through all those things. So like, she's like, it has to be said this way because insert reason, you know? And I'm like, well, I want to see what the actors do and like come in. So like between the both of us, it's this constant push and pull, which is why I think the movie works in great and elevated from where it started off with, you know? So,
Well, the dialogue was great. The dialogue is great. The movie's great. Everything about it, from the names to like the just the images, the tropes, and like it's a smart. I know that they think that this is just a silly like horror comedy, but it's smarter.
It's
a lot smarter than people would give it credit for.
That's the thing that has been like the through line for a lot of the past guests, was like how incredible, and I don't think Christine gives herself enough credit for this, of how smart the script is and how like how everything is like it's like a weird chaotic organization. But
it was intentional.
And it's intentional too.
I never
it know is intentional.
But that being said, yeah. I do have to 10-1 really bad. So yes. Can I do that real or should
we? No.
What's a 10-1?
I got a 10-1. Let's
do it. I'm done. I gotta go. We're about to do like an egg hunt here. All the kids are coming.
Perfect.
Yeah. No. Look, no worries. Let's wrap it up.
If this is my place, we all got to look at everyone else's space. This is my room. In my log cabin that. In the mountains in Oklahoma.
Ooh,
and all the kids are about to come because they're going to do an Easter egg hunt. Because
yay!
But I'm leaving for that because I don't want to be around for the kids' Easter egg hunts.
But
we named this place, and I want to say this, and to my girlfriend Mel, who I love, we named this house that we have in the mountains in Oklahoma Nanny Chaha.
Oh, what does that mean?
And Nanny Chaha is a Choctaw word, and it's their legend of like the origin and the rebirth of life. Mm-hmm. That like things that live, live, and things that die, die. Mm-hmm. But there's no leaving. Everything sort of like comes and goes. So like if ever you're in a time in your life where you're like at the end of something, it's not at the end.
Right.
You're at this new beginning. And so Nani Chaha means that we're constantly evolving and we're constantly opening doors. And we right. are like rediscovering who we are. Come see me. You both of you come. Let's have a weekend retreat here. It is amazing.
We've
got natural springs. It's very witchy. We do drums and moon rituals and a lot of love and a lot of life.
How about that, ladies and gentlemen? We love it. Thank you so much, Jason, for
Adam. Thank you. It's so good to see your face.
Yes, thank you. I'm so excited.
Oh, I love you, Christina. I can't. Oh, a couple of weeks. I'm there.
We're gonna have the best time. It's gonna be so fun.
The first event I will be at is gonna be the matinee.
Yes.
That day, and then the neon party that night, and then the next day. And then
so everybody who wants to see Jason, who wants to meet him and talk to him and see what his process is, May 7th is where you want to be. So May 7th, we have two events. May 7th, we have a matinee at AFS Cinema, so Austin Film Society Cinema in Austin, Texas. And then right after that, we have a party called the Neon Party at Kitty Cohen's. Yes.
And then the next weekend we have the Phoenix Nightclub in Louisiana and Shreveport. There's the Phoenix Club.
Yes.
We're doing the Mermaid Masquerade.
Yes, it's going to be badass.
And then and the next day in New Orleans is the Broad Theater premiere.
Yes.
With, I think, something special that
Something special is going to happen. We're cooking up something special. Yes. And then we're going to end the weekend with a bang with our good old... drag show.
Oh, I love you too. I love your podcast. I love Get so Realisms. It's one of my favorite books ever. I still have my copy.
Yay.
I show it to young filmmakers all the time.
Get your copy today, fools. Let's go.
It is a brilliant book. Like it's brilliant for all ages, and it's crafted in such a very like illustrated way that's easy to see and doesn't make you feel stupid.
Yes.
I appreciate you both very much. And this has been a treat.
Yes.
We appreciate you. And Jason said it here, folks. So UrsleyFilm.com for all of the touring stuff, every single event.
Everything. And go and sign up because we actually go in and we're going to do more and more drawings. People get to win tickets and stuff.
Well, if they go today, is it true? I told a couple people if they go today to sign up, they might win a ticket to one of our exclusive events.
That's correct.
They can choose which one they want to go to.
They can choose which one they go to. Like Mia last week won. Tickets to the AFS, the screening that you're going to.
Yay! Yes. I'm at all of them almost.
Yes. So make sure to sign up today because we're going to pick the next winner very soon. And it is, depending on where you are, we will tailor it to you get to pick which, what you want, a screening, a download to the iTunes, whichever you want. But you got to go sign up on UrsleyFilm.com. So,
yes.
Yes.
Get it today. I can't wait to hug y'all's necks. I miss you very much.
Virtual hug.
We love hugs here at the Get Realists podcast. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you so much, Facebook. Thank you so much, Instagram. We love you. We appreciate you. Next week, tune in for another episode. Hopefully, we're not too busy. And that's maybe, I think that's about it. Christine, you got anything?
That's it. We all have to pee.
Thank you.
Bye, bye.
Thank you bye, so guys. Much, Instagram. Thank you, Facebook.
Thank you.
We're leaving. Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.